Vekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are tackling a really significant work. It's Walter Rodney's 1972 book, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. Just incredibly influential.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those books that fundamentally shifts your perspective. It's not just presenting history, it's making a powerful argument, a real political intervention, you could say.
And that argument is pretty stark, isn't it?
It really is. Rodney essentially throws out the whole idea that Africa's poverty is just, you know, the way things are, or that it failed to develop.
Instead, he says it was actively underdeveloped.
Exactly. That word, underdeveloped, implies an action, a systematic process carried out by Europe over centuries. Exploitation, basically.
And that distinction, undeveloped versus underdeveloped, that's really the core of it all.
It is. The central idea, and this is what we really want you to grasp, is that Europe getting richer and Africa getting poorer weren't separate things happening at the same time.
They were connected.
Intricately linked, like two sides of the same coin, historically speaking.
So why should you, the listener, care about a book from 1972? What's the so what?
Well, the so what is that this book gives you the tools, the analytical framework, to look at the world today. Global wealth gaps, debt crises, trade deals.
They don't just happen randomly.
Precisely. Rodney argues they're the lingering effects, the legacy of colonialism. It pushes us away from thinking about history in terms of pity, maybe, towards thinking about accountability.
Okay, so to really get the power of this argument, we need to talk about the man himself, Walter Rodney, because this wasn't just some abstract academic exercise for him.
No, absolutely not. He was quite a figure, a Guyanese historian born in 1942, very bright, got his PhD in African history from Esso, as in London, when he was only 24.
Wow, 24.
Yeah, incredibly young. But his academic work and his political activism were deeply intertwined.
And his perspective was quite unique, wasn't it? Coming from Guyana, from the global south.
Definitely. That's key. He wasn't looking at Africa from the outside in like many European historians. He was writing from the perspective of the colonized. And importantly, he wanted his work to be a tool for liberation.
So not just for academics in ivory towers.
No, not at all. He combined Marxist analysis, you know, looking at capitalism, class, with Pan-African activism. A famous example is his time in Jamaica. He got involved in what were called groundings.
Groundings? What were those exactly?
They were basically community discussions, really deep political conversations, often with working class Rastafarians, taking these complex anti-colonial ideas out of the university lecture halls.
And bringing them to the people directly affected.
Right. Sharing knowledge, building consciousness. It was seen as so radical, so dangerous by the Jamaican government back then that they actually banned him from re-entering the country in 1968. Caused huge protests.
You can see how his writing then really had a clear purpose. It wasn't just describing the world, it was trying to change it, arming people with ideas.
Absolutely, which makes his end all the more tragic. He was assassinated in 1980, only 38 years old.
By a bomb, right?
Yeah, a car bomb. And it's widely believed it was politically motivated. His ideas were seen as a genuine threat to the powers that be. It sort of cemented his legacy as a martyr for the cause.
Okay, let's turn to the book itself now, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. Essentially, it's a detailed historical argument against the whole idea of colonialism as some kind of civilizing mission.
Right, and before he even gets into the historical detail, Rodney does something really important conceptually. He challenges the standard Western way of measuring development.
Like just looking at GDP or industrial output.
Exactly, he says that's too narrow. He pushes for a more holistic definition, something like a society's growing ability to manage its own environment, to improve its own social systems, and, crucially, to protect its members, both from internal issues and external threats.
So if a society can feed itself, defend itself, organize itself effectively, it's developing.
Pretty much. And when you use that yardstick, it becomes much clearer what was actually lost, what was taken away by European intervention.
The book then walks us through this. Chronologically, right? Over five centuries.
Yeah, it starts by showing that Africa had diverse, self-developing societies before the 15th century. Then it details the impact of the slave trade, the massive drain of human capital. And finally, it analyzes formal colonialism as a system designed for extraction.
Which brings us back to that core idea. Underdevelopment isn't just lagging behind.
No, it's an active process, a regression, an enforced dependency, imposed by a stronger power from the outside. Africa wasn't poor. Rodney argues it was made poor. It was impoverished.
To really hammer that home, he first has to establish what was there before. He needs to counter that old colonial myth of, you know, darkest Africa with no history.
Right. And he does that very effectively. He lays out this baseline of pre-colonial achievement. He points to sophisticated statecraft in places like the Ghana, Mali, and Songhai empires.
Complex societies.
Absolutely. And advanced trade networks, like on the Swahili coast. Unique architecture. Think of Great Zimbabwe. Even major centers of learning, like the University of Sankore in Timbuktu. It was a real intellectual hub.
That context is so important. It shows Europe didn't walk into an empty stage. They disrupted something already vibrant and evolving.
Then comes what Rodney sees as the catastrophic break on that development. The transatlantic slave trade, lasting for centuries.
And for Rodney, this was the biggest factor stopping progress.
Yes, the single greatest factor. And he analyzes it not just as a moral horror, which it was, but as a profound economic and demographic catastrophe.
Let's focus on the demographic impact for a moment. What did that mean in real terms, economically?
Well, it wasn't just the huge numbers of people stolen, though that was immense. It was who was taken.
The young, the strong.
Exactly. The healthiest, the most productive individuals. Your potential farmers, artisans, builders, innovators, they were forcibly removed. This led to population stagnation, even decline in parts of Africa, at the very time Europe's population was growing.
And that stolen labor fueled growth elsewhere.
Precisely. In the Americas and indirectly in Europe. Their economic expansion was literally built on the backs of enslaved Africans. Africa's loss was their gain. It's a direct transfer of potential.
And it wasn't just about losing people. It also completely destabilized societies, didn't it?
Hugely. Rodney shows how the constant demand for captives tore apart existing political structures. Sophisticated states like the Kingdom of Togo, he discusses, were undermined and eventually destroyed.
Replaced by what?
Replaced by endemic warfare and instability. It actually fostered the rise of predatory states like Dahomey is often cited, whose main economic activity became capturing and selling other Africans. Productive activity withered. Extraction became primary.
So if the slave trade was that initial violent phase of extraction,
then formal colonialism, particularly after the Berlin Conference in 1885, was the perfection of that system, making it more efficient, more systematic.
How so?
Rodney meticulously details how every aspect of the colonial state, the administration, the laws, the police, even the infrastructure, was designed with one primary goal, extracting wealth and shipping it back to Europe.
You mentioned infrastructure. The railways are a classic example, right?
A perfect example.
Well,
look at a map of colonial railways in Africa. They almost never connect major African towns or regions to foster internal trade and development.
Where do they run?
They run from the interior, where the minerals or cash crops were, straight to the nearest port, like conveyor belts, designed purely for export, not for building an integrated African economy.
And you mentioned cash crops. That connects to the tax system, too, I imagine.
Yes, the tax system was, ingenious in a really brutal way. Colonial governments imposed taxes, hut taxes, poll taxes. But here's the catch. You had to pay them in the official colonial currency.
Which most Africans living through subsistence farming wouldn't have.
Exactly. So how do you get the currency? You have no choice but to enter the colonial economy. You have to go work for wages, usually very low wages, on European-owned plantations or in mines or building those railways.
So it's basically forced labor, just framed as taxation.
Pretty much. It forces people into the cash economy on terms dictated entirely by the colonizer. And it often involved replacing diverse local food farming with monoculture cash crops.
The monoculture trap.
Right. Fields that once grew food for the community were turned over to cotton or cocoa or groundnuts, whatever Europe demanded. This made African economies incredibly dependent on global commodity prices, which they couldn't control.
Set in London or Paris.
Exactly. And it made them vulnerable to famine if the cash crop failed or prices collapsed.
Yeah.
Local food security was destroyed.
Beyond the purely economic, Rodney also talks about the psychological impact, doesn't he? The role of colonial education.
Yes, that's crucial. He argues colonial education wasn't about enlightenment or broad empowerment. Its main purpose was to create a small class of Africans who could help run the colonial administration at the lower levels.
Clerks, interpreters.
That sort of thing. People who could follow orders, manage basic tasks, but not engineers, scientists, or critical thinkers who might challenge the system itself.
And this education system actively promoted certain values.
Definitely. It often taught Africans to admire European culture and, tragically, to devalue or even feel ashamed of their own heritage, their own history. It aimed to create psychological compliance.
which leads to this concept he uses, the comprador bourgeoisie. Can you break that down?
Sure. It's a term originally from Marxist analysis that Rodney applies here. It refers to a section of the local elite, often those educated within the colonial system whose economic interests and even their way of thinking become tied to the colonizers.
So they benefit from the colonial system.
Yes, they act as intermediaries, local managers for foreign interests. Their own prosperity depends on maintaining that system of extraction. Rodney argues this class often played a key role in ensuring that even after political independence was achieved,
the underlying economic structures, the dependency, remained largely unchanged.
Exactly. Neocolonialism, in essence.
Okay, so pulling back from the details, what are the big overarching themes or messages we should take away from this?
Well, the first, and maybe the most important, is that reframing we talked about. Underdevelopment as active violence.
It's not a passive state.
It's not. It's the result of deliberate historical actions. Purposeful injury, you could say. And recognizing that forces you to look at global inequality today differently. Not as just bad luck or internal failure, but as a result of historical relationships of power and exploitation.
Okay, theme one, underdevelopment as an active process. What's next?
The second is what you call the dialectical fates. The idea that European development and African underdevelopment are fundamentally linked. You can't fully understand one without the other.
So the wealth generated during, say, the Industrial Revolution in Britain
was structurally connected to the resources and labor being extracted from Africa and the colonies. The profits from the slave trade, from colonial mining, from plantations, they fueled European growth. It wasn't just happening alongside African decline. It was in many ways because of it.
So we can't study continents in isolation.
Absolutely not. Their fates were intertwined. And the third key theme flows from that, the legacy of neocolonialism.
This idea that political independence didn't automatically mean economic independence.
Right. Rodney was writing in the 60s and early 70s when many African nations had recently gained independence, but he argued that often the basic economic structure's reliance on exporting raw materials, control by foreign corporations, debt burdens remained in place.
So the control just shifted forms.
Yeah.
From direct political rule to economic leverage.
That's the argument. And it makes his work incredibly relevant for analyzing things today, like international debt, foreign aid packages, trade agreements.
You have to ask, do these things promote genuine self-reliance, or do they create new forms of dependency that benefit the powerful nations? It gives you a critical lens.
Rodney's writing is also just incredibly powerful. He has some very memorable ways of putting things.
Yeah, that metaphor about the one-armed bandit is striking.
It really is. Hmm. Let me see if I can recall it roughly. He said something like, colonialism wasn't a civilizing mission. It was a one-armed bandit. The arm it used pulled the lever to take out wealth, but it had no other arm. It put nothing back.
It just perfectly captures that purely extractive nature, doesn't it? All take, no give.
Exactly. And he also really focused on the core issue of power. There's a quote where he says something like, the decisiveness of the short period of colonialism and its negative consequences spring mainly from the fact that Africa lost power. Power is the ultimate determinant.
Once political control was lost, everything else became possible for the colonizer.
That's the idea. Loss of sovereignty opened the door to all the other forms of exploitation.
And finally, that point about education and psychology.
Yeah, the idea that colonial education wasn't neutral. It actively taught the African to admire the colonizer and to be ashamed of his own heritage. Creating that mindset was essential for maintaining control.
So bringing this right up to today, how can we actually use these insights from Rodney? What are the real-life applications?
Well, first off, I think it's a powerful tool for media literacy. When you encounter news stories or documentaries that seem to portray Africa solely through lenses of poverty, corruption, or conflict,
often implicitly blaming Africans themselves.
Right. Rodney's work pushes you to ask, what are the bigger historical structural forces at play? Who benefits from this situation? It helps you challenge those simplistic, often victim-blaming narratives.
Okay, so better media analysis. What else?
Critical policy analysis. Especially when looking at international development aid, loans from institutions like the IMF or World Bank or trade deals.
Instead of just accepting them as help.
You can use Rodney's framework to ask critical questions. Do the conditions attached to this loan force cuts in essential services like health or education? Does this trade deal primarily benefit foreign corporations extracting resources? Does it actually foster local capacity or does it deepen dependency?
So it equips you to look beneath the surface of aid.
Definitely. And finally, I think there's an element of empowerment, particularly for people of African descent.
How so?
Understanding this history not as a story of inherent failure, but as a story of pre-colonial achievement followed by centuries of targeted, systematic underdevelopment, it can be incredibly clarifying. It replaces potential feelings of shame instilled by colonial narratives with historical understanding and potentially a drive for change.
That makes sense. Shifting the narrative internally. So, reflecting on our discussion, what's the biggest takeaway for you? What did you learn or find most impactful?
For me, it really is that fundamental paradigm shift. Seeing poverty not just as a state of being, but as a relationship, the power of that active verb, to underdevelop. It forces you to think about agency, about cause and effect in global history, discarding the passive undeveloped and recognizing that poverty is often something done to people and places. That's huge.
Yeah, that active verb really sticks with you. For me, the lasting insight is how Rodney connects the past so directly to the present. His argument that these exploitative structures didn't just vanish with independence, that they persist in different forms today. It suggests that achieving real economic justice and sovereignty isn't just about tweaking the current system,
but requires more fundamental break.
That seems to be his implication. A radical challenge to the international economic order that, he argues, continues to perpetuate those dependencies established centuries ago. It's history, but it feels incredibly current.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A vital book for anyone trying to understand why the world looks the way it does today.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.